uncensored, no holds barred talk. 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. This is the Global Reality Radio Network.
Welcome to another live edition of the Global Reality right here on the Global Reality Radio Network. I'm your host, Josh Reeves. Thanks for being with us here tonight for yet another live edition of the broadcast. Wednesday into Thursday now, the 13th into the 14th, 2011. Glad you could join us here tonight for another late night Moonbat edition of the show. We are starting later than normal here tonight, but I didn't know if I was going to do a show tonight. I haven't been feeling well today. I just got a weird migraine all day and it felt really... I was running a fever and stuff, and I'm still kind of feeling kind of hot right now. So, I am here with you just a little later than we have been starting. So, we'll get into some news here. We got not a lot of news tonight. So we'll get through the news here in the first segment of the show. And, then we'll move on and, get into our continued reading from the Lost Book of Enki for you here on the show tonight. So, should be a good broadcast. Thanks for joining us here. My website where this broadcast originates from is www.theglobalreality.com. It's www.theglobalreality.com. And you can find the links and everything to listen to the show. You can find the archives for the shows we've done here. You can find all of my documentary films as well. You can find video clips, the... music CDs from our band, the Demi Gods, Global Reality chat room. Hey, you can't forget about that. Sorry about that with our microphone. There's a little stuff cutting out there. I had some chaos going on today because I was doing my, well, I told you guys yesterday I was having this meeting, and that's all he told me it was going to be, was just, you know, a Skype conference with the, you know, casting director of this TV show that they want me on, allegedly, and some homicide show. I'm talking about homicides past and present or something. But, so I just, you know, assumed it was going to be talking over Skype, like every other person I've ever talked to doing this. And then it was supposed to be at noon, and they didn't get it done. And then I was waiting. It was after 1. And then they finally get ready to do it after, you know, wasting my time for an hour. And then she tells me it's going to be, video, not voice. And so, it was, I was flying around trying to, get my video to work, and I couldn't find the video cable. Somebody had unplugged the video cable from my computer that I used to transfer video to. I don't know how that happened mysteriously, man. So I couldn't find that. And then my laptop camera would work, but the voice wouldn't work, blah, 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 blah. And so in the ensuing chaos, cola got spilled on my desk, almost went onto my computer. Thank goodness it didn't. It has all my files for my new movie on it. And almost ruined my 2 preamp. I don't know. It seems to be working okay right now, but it's just, it's kind of got a weird sound to it. So I'm going to try to get this adjusted as best I can here for you tonight. And that's why there's crackly stuff. So just bear with me. Weird, strange, wild stuff. Anyway, glad you could join us here tonight. If you want to send an email into the show, we got a few emails to get into in the first part of the broadcast tonight. GlobalRealityShow@gmail.com. It's GlobalRealityShow gmail.com. But yeah, I had the so apparently this conference thing turned into a you know, a basically an audition, you know, a video audition, which kind of sucks for me because I wasn't expecting that, you know. So I'm like looking ragged and got dark black circles under my eyes and hadn't shaved. I'm like, oh, this is great, you know. But, you know, I probably would care if I even cared about this. And my thing about it is that I'm, you know, I haven't actively tried to seek out anything like this. So if somebody asked me to do something like this and I don't end up making it, I'm not going to lose sleep over it or cry over it. But at the same time, it's, you know, flip side of that. Hey, also, if somebody, if you ask me to do something because you think that I have talent to do it, I'm going to, you know, believe me, I'm going to do my best. I'm going to do my best to make sure that I at least give you my best work, my best shot that I can, you know, because I'm just one of those, I'm one of those guys that just believes if, you know, if somebody asks you to do something because they think you have talent to do it, then you should, you know, you should give that your 100% regardless of whether or not it's something that you may be really, because I didn't actively seek this out, but I'm not going to say no to it because it, you know, it could be a great opportunity to get my name and my work out there. And I have a feeling that's why the casting director even contacted me in the first place. She didn't say that, but I just kind of, she said she's a big fan of the show and she's been listening for a while. And so she seemed to be genuinely interested in, you know, really wanting to have me on here. So I think that may be what it is. You know, I think it's probably just somebody who's, because I've said, talked about that on the show before. I've got emails from so many people from so many different walks of life and different jobs. We have people that work in all fields. I mean, we have archaeologists that listen to this show that are out in the field, you know, that are out there digging in the places that we talk about. You know, there's people in, you know, I get anonymous emails from people all the time who I never know who they are. Sometimes these people say that they're, you know, well-known people and, you know, well-known movie stars or rock stars. They never say who they are because they send it from a third-party anonymous email, so there's no way for me to tell who they are. But then, I'm skeptical about that because they don't, you know, they never seem to send, they don't seem to send any donations if they're well-known people, you know what I mean? All our contributions, all the people that keep us alive are just, you know, regular, everyday people. And, that's the whole thing about this. You know, my whole thing about it is that I'm not, you know, I'm not going to sweat either way, but you never know. Something might come of it and, it might be good to get, you know, help get the name out there and get this out there in a bigger way. I'm definitely for it just because, you know, when somebody asks you, says, you know, wants you to try out for something because they think you have talent enough to do it. That's a big thing. Very honored by that. So, you know, that's kind of my attitude about this thing. If it happens, it happens. If it doesn't, it doesn't. But I'm just honored to have the opportunity that somebody even asked me, to do it. You know, that's, I think that above all else, if something comes of it or if something doesn't, the fact that, you know, one person, somebody out there, you know, felt I had talent enough to even, attempt to do it to me is, I'm very honored by that. So thank you. I think that's the message I want to get across to people about this. We're working on, we've been getting all kinds of messages for years about having a physical address to send checks for contributions to the network, because some people don't like to use bank cards and PayPal and all that stuff. We are working on that, and I think we should hopefully have that up and running for you by tomorrow, and just check the website tomorrow afternoon or something and start checking it there tomorrow afternoon. I'll try to get that over to Manhydra as soon as I have it. And only problem is we're going to have some cash to get it going. It's like $30 or something like that, $23 or $30, something like that to get it going, I think for 6 months or something. And then that same amount or double that, $50 to get a year or something. So if anybody out there wants to contribute to that so we can get that going, please do so at the website where you chip in to support our work anyway, the chip in banner or the donate button, whatever one you want to use there. Or you can just use my direct PayPal email address, which is dayglow76@yahoo.com. That's dayglow76@yahoo.com. Let's get into some emails here tonight. thanks to everybody out there as well for their kind words and comments about the Red Eyes interview. It's been up for about 24 hours now, and we've gotten a lot of positive responses from the show so far. There were some things in there that we kind of got sidetracked on after I was listening back to it. I was going, there were some things I wanted to get in there that I didn't get to get in there because we got sidetracked onto other things. So I'm going to be making a list. I'm going to be going back and going through that and making a list of the things that I didn't get to hit that I want to hit so that next time, because they are going to have me back on, they said. Next time I go on there, we can detail more of that stuff. And it was great. I thought Henrik Palmergren was really great. I thought he had his shit together as far as, he'd done the research on and actually looked into the stuff that I talk about, and looked into the CMP stuff. He actually, had an idea of what was going on with it. He didn't, because some people, they want to have you on to talk about it, but they, they just want to have you tell them everything. They haven't done any research themselves. And that's one of the things for me. I get emails from people sometimes that say, Josh, oh my goodness, blah, 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 blah. I heard you talking about this. How come you didn't mention this, 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 and this too? How come you didn't say that about this? And for me, that's the way I make my films as well. I don't ever pretend to get up here and tell you everything that there is to know about a subject. That would take all the fun out of it, wouldn't it? It would for me. I mean, if you could just have somebody give you all the information and you never had to go look up anything for yourself, that would take all the fun and life out of it. Half the battle with this stuff is you actually doing your own research and your own digging and your own looking and putting the pieces together for yourselves. All I can do is show you kind of the reflection of what's going on with me as I'm doing my own research. That's kind of all my show really is, That's just kind of a reflection from where I'm at. And hopefully you take that and build on that and do your own research. But so, when you hear me talk about certain topics and you don't think that I elaborated enough to your, specifications, understand that the reason I do that is because, it would take all the fun out of it. I tell you these things so that you'll go look into them and find the things that I didn't tell you. And then you go, oh man, you were talking about this. Well, I found this. You're not going to believe this. Oh my God. And that's how those little aha moments, when you finally put something together like that, that's what keeps you pushing forward and keeps you researching and keeps you hot and relevant and keeps you looking, And I think that's the most important thing is that you're always pushing forward with research and looking into things. Let's see what kind of emails we got here tonight. By the way, there's a video up now. I'd like to see if Manhydra can get that. It's from the Illuminate Scams YouTube channel. He puts up all our archive shows every day. Thanks again to him for doing that. He works his butt off getting up the radio show every day on YouTube and gets that out to a much wider audience. He's in the UK and Britain there. So, oi, mate, thank you so much for doing that. He made a video that has part one and part two of the Red Ice interview in it in one video. So hopefully we can get Manhydra to get that up on the website under the video clip section. And please grab that and there you can listen to both hours. We've been playing it here on the stream. We'll continue to play here on the stream as well. Some people have asked me if I can put up hour two to download from my website. I will eventually, maybe, I don't know. I'm going to go ahead and say I'm not going to do that. The video is already made. There's a video that's already made, the Illuminated Scam made. It's got hour one, hour two in it. I'm not going to put up hour two. I'll put up hour one if you guys want, but you can just download it from that from their website. So there's really no sense in me doing that. But the reason is because that's kind of their bread and butter. That's how they stay alive. That's how they get they don't have commercials and stuff like that on their show. So the only way that they get money in is for people who subscribe to get hour two. So I would just kind of feel kind of bad if I, if I put that up there. I don't mind playing. I don't think they probably mind me playing it here on the stream or something for you. And I don't really mind doing that either, but I don't want to feel like I'm taking money out of their coffers, cause I know how it is, man. It's tough to stay alive doing this. And, I think there's some value in what they do over there at Red Eye. So I'm just not going to do that. So, but somebody did email me and ask me, so I wanted to address that. All right. This is, hi, Josh. This is Zohair from Pakistan. He sent us emails before. Hello, Zohair. Thank you so much. It just blows me away. He's been listening to us for so long, and he found us in Pakistan of all places. The last place on earth, one of the last places on earth you think you'd ever find a Global Reality listener in Pakistan, man. You know, he's over there fighting a good fight himself. This is Zohair from Pakistan. I've been an avid listener for the last 3 years. Yeah, thanks so much, man. Recently, while reading from the Lost Book of Enki, you were discussing Area 51. Well, Area 51 in alphanumeric translates to Area Ia. Oh, good catch, my friend. Good catch. Oh, you can hear it in my voice. But you catch something even I didn't know. Oh, good catch, my friend. Area 51 in alphanumeric translates to Area Ia. E equals 5 and A equals 1. There you go. Oh, my goodness. Nice one, Zohair. Nice one, my friend. Wow. Digging on that for sure. Man, Area Ia, oh, that kills me. I should have fucking known. Ia has also been encoded into the language, the English language, through the vowel system. And hundreds of words have Ia embedded in them. Yeah, exactly. No, I knew that. No, that's exactly true. That's absolutely true. Such as heart, ear, fear, reed, area, etc., etc. Ia was also lord of the water, and hence the French word for water, Iao. Heart is also an anagram for earth, and Enki was lord of the earth. Right. That's what the Ia in earth is, the realm of Ia. I would like to know your take on the 9/11 symbology, as this seems to be a big part of our reality construct. 9/11 in alphanumeric is IK, letters which are also a part of Enki. IKEA, which numerically is 91151, 91151, wow. IKEA is a world-famous home supply depot. And yeah, 91151 is what the numerically IKEA comes after. There are hundreds of such examples. What do you think 911 represents? Well, I actually have done several shows on this in the past. There's one that I've played here on the show several times, 9/11 shows, where I've gotten into that before, into the occult symbology of that. So I'm kind of, I'm not really into getting into that whole thing right here for you tonight, but, well, you've got the all of these, I can't even say it. Sorry, I've had a bad migraine today, so my brain's fried. All of these numbers in sacred mathematics have very, very important symbolism. Most of them represent oftentimes sun symbolism, which you can also translate to, you know, some, what they're actually appearing to be in, like Egyptian stuff, to be the sun is actually more appropriately Sirius. So one of the things that you see in these numbers is that you have the law of five, is essentially what it, but if you go Google the law of five, that's where you'll find a lot of this stuff for 911. But yeah, it definitely ties in with what you're saying there. The interesting thing, especially if you're trying to make a correlation between 9/11 and, well, the events of September 11th and Ia and that whole thing, well, and Enki, that's what the two twin towers were said to represent. Enlil and Enki. And it's just like you have, you know, Zeus was Enki, and then all these different characters, and then Horus was other characters in Sumeria, different incarnations of them. Same thing there. It's the twin pillars, you know, that's what it represents. And those meant different things through different times. You have the twin pillars of Freemasonry when you walk into any Masonic lodge, John the Revelator, John the Baptist, Enlil, Enki. No, that's what these represent. So, that's what I've been trying to put together about 9/11 and the whole Enlil and Enki, and they tell you, you know, the Rockefellers actually said that they were Nelson and David. One of the towers was Nelson, the other one was David, which is very interesting because Nelson Rockefeller was a right winger. David Rockefeller's a left winger. So, you know, the towers both representing that, and you have to be aware, you have to understand that they were aware of that. But I've often been wondering for the past 10 years, you know, that there is something deeper about 9/11. Definitely was symbolic of something. But I don't think it's a coincidence there that, you know, of course, 9/11, the Twin Towers, Enlil, Enki, the bringing down of that, while at the same time going in and using that, that's where I think it ties in, is the fact that they bring down the towers represent Enlil and Enki, and then what do? They use 9/11 to justify going into Iraq in 2003 and coincidentally happening to steal all the antiquities that relate to the kingdoms that had the mythology of Enlil and Enki and said that they created mankind. So I think that was symbolic. I think 9/11 is what it single-handedly gave them the ability and the power to rob mankind of its birthright, its heritage, its knowledge. By bringing down the Twin Towers, which would symbolically be bringing down Enlil and Enki, and then going and conquering the Middle East, committing all this genocide against these bloodlines in Iraq, which allegedly go back to the Sumerian kingdom and Sumerian empire. And if you believe what they say about Saddam Hussein setting up that library in Iraq just prior to the invasion in 2003, where he was going to have all the ancient Sumerian cylinder seals and tablets and all this stuff, and he was going to show to the world that the Arab populations of ancient Mesopotamia, modern-day Iraq, were the actual Semites, the actually quote-unquote God's chosen people, and that this is why we've had Blackwater and the new Crusaders initiating the new crusade against that area of the world. Because that's the same thing they've been doing for years, trying to wipe out that population because they see those people there, the bloodline descendants of that area, as the only threat to the, you know, that the other end, the white end of the bloodline's power supremacy. So there you go, Zohair. Nice snag on the EA thing there. That's a good catch, my friend. Thank you for that. Let's see. Here's one from Sophie. Hello, Josh. I just heard your Red Ice interview and found it fascinating. When you mentioned words in the context of the Masonic text, I can't remember what it was called. Yeah, Albert Pike's Morals and Dogma, which could literally open you up and affect your consciousness, etc. That way, in a negative sense, it made me think of something I was drawn to quite intuitively earlier this year. It was called The Template. It was also posted by David Icke. It's hard to describe what they do in just a few words, but you might want to look at their website, www.thetemplate.org.com or thetemplateorg.com. I experienced it for myself, and it involved the use of very profound spoken words and sacred geometry to literally reconnect circuitry within the body. Ooh, well, be careful of some of that stuff, you know. I'd definitely be careful of it, anything that David Icke's pushing with it that has that, because, you know, you get into the area where you don't know if they're using neuro-linguistic programming, NLP, or whether they're using incantations or any of that stuff on you. You got to be very careful when you see people pushing that kind of stuff. You know, I'm not saying don't do it if you want to. I'm not saying it's bad either. I just think that any kind of stuff like that, it's using subliminals and using, you know, profound, soft-spoken words, sacred geometry. You've got to be very careful of the person who's using it. I think it's fine to use that stuff yourself in the context of the ways that you want to use it for your own personal magic or your own personal anything else that's for you that you're giving back to and involved in. But sometimes what you're doing is you're subjecting yourself to somebody else's magic. And so what happens when you do that is you're basically at the command of whoever has created that magic. And definitely if you're using NLP and neuro-linguistic programming and you're using strong. The subconscious mind reacts so strongly to strong geometric symbols that it is one of the easiest things to use for brainwashing. This is exactly why the secret societies, illuminated fraternities, all use these strong symbols, such as the Masonic G and the compass and the double-headed eagle, the obelisk. These images, because of the numerical values that they have in them and the way that they're put together in sacred geometry and gematria, which goes back to Kabbalism as well, these have a strong, strong effect on our subconscious mind, stronger than we're ever consciously aware of. This is why all the advertising companies use all of these different strong, very strong occultic symbols in their, you've got what's it, the Volkswagen is 666. You've got, on and on and on. They're sigils. They're magic, powerful sigils that are there in order to train your subconscious mind in a certain way and to get you to connect with those symbols so then you connect with their product. So, again, I'm not saying that kind of stuff is all bad, but I'm just saying you got to be very careful of that, especially when it's somebody like David Icke or one of these truther guys pushing it. I don't know. Just be careful. But I experienced it for myself. It involved the use of very profound spoken words and sacred geometry to literally reconnect circuitry within the body. There's a book by Juliet and Jeeva Carter called World Bridger, which describes the 20-year process of bringing the template ceremonies into existence, and it is fascinating. It involves reptilians, the moon, the whole story of the human. Anyway, just thought you might be interested. Great site, by the way. Thank you. Yeah, thank you, Sophie. Okay, I'll check that out. TheTemplateOrg.com. Yeah. And I'm not coming down on you, Julie. I'm just concerned for you. I'm concerned for everybody out there. I'm concerned for people who, I just see so much of this stuff, especially with, I've seen people that, claim to be hypnotists and, let me hypnotize you. Don't let people hypnotize you, man. Especially these people who just don't flat note what they're doing with this stuff. I mean, you can fuck somebody up by hypnotizing them and doing stuff to them that doesn't need to be done. So you got to be very, very careful with all that stuff. Let's see what else we have in the mailbag tonight. Happy birthday, Josh. This is from Steven. Happy birthday, Josh. Sorry it's late, but I just heard via Red Ice. You're kind of a dick. Or should I say you have an abrasive personality, but I like your work. And listen to your show. Okay. Thank you, Steven. Yeah, I am kind of a dick. Let's see what else we have here. Here's one from our anagram friend, Allison. She says, have you ever heard of Dr. Maslow? Or Maslow. Yeah, Maslow. I've heard of Maslow. He's one of those 60s guys, Timothy Leary, all that stuff. Look at the founder of the work of the concept of self-actualization, Dr. Maslow. He was one of the most significant visionaries of the human potential movement of the 60s and 70s. Wasn't that whole thing CIA funded? The whole human potential movement? Am I wrong about that? Wasn't the whole thing CIA funded from the top down? I mean, Leary admitted that he was co-opted by the CIA. They basically come in and told him that, he was going to work for them, but they were going to kill him and put him in jail. And he was like, okay, I'll do it. And he became famous for his observations that there are a few individuals who live wonderful, wonderfully satisfying lives. He was the first in the history of modern psychology to begin a formal study of what we term self-actualized individuals. And he enumerated the personality traits these people had in common. I might be illustrating a book on his work. The anagrams so far are most reptilian. Any thoughts on this character if you're not too busy? I don't really have any thoughts on the character. Other than that, if you want me to, I'll double check my facts. I'll go back and research him again and look at him. And I just want to say the human potential movement and all that stuff. I want to say that was in the same school of Leary, and it was funded from the CIA from the top down. I don't know. I could be wrong about that, but I'll look into it again. I'll let you know. How about that? Let's see what else we have here. That's it. Okay, yeah, I think that's all the mail we have in the bag tonight. Let's see what we've got here for news. Last week, William Wan and Peter Finn of the Washington Post reported that at least 50 countries have now purchased or developed pilotless military drones. This is from Alternet. 1,200 drones, lethal cyborg insects, C-shoot robots, and how machines are taking over war. Recently, the Chinese had more than 24 models in some stage of development at a display at the Zahari Air Show, some of which they are eager to sell to other countries. So three cheers for a thoroughly dronified world. In my lifetime, I've repeatedly seen advanced weapon systems or mind-boggling technologies of war hailed as near-utopian paths to victory and future peace, just as the atomic bomb was soon after my birth. Include in that the Vietnam-era electronic battlefield, President Ronald Reagan's Strategic Defense Initiative, a.k.a. Star Wars, smart bombs and smart missiles of the first Gulf War, and in the 21st century, net-centric warfare, the Rumsfeldian high-tech favorite. You know the results of this sort of magical thinking about wonder weapons or technology just as well as I do. The atomic bomb led to an almost half-century-long nuclear superpower standoff nightmare to nuclear proliferation, and so to the possibility that, someday even terrorists might possess such weapons. The electronic battlefield was incapable of staving off defeat in Vietnam. Reagan's impermeable anti-missile shield in space never came even faintly close to making it into the heavens. Yeah, boy, that's bullshit. They've had space-based weapons up there since 71, bucko. They've had them since before, long before Reagan ever proposed Star Wars, long before Star Wars was even a word in the movies or anything else. Fact. Give me a fucking break. Do your homework. Those smart bombs of the Gulf War proved remarkably dumb in the 50 decapitation strikes the Bush administration launched against Saddam Hussein's regime on the first day of the 2003 invasion of Iraq, took out not a single Iraqi leader. And the history of the net-centric military in Iraq is well known. Its success since Secretary of Defense Rumsfeld in retirement, in the same way robot drones as assassination weapons will prove to be just another weapon system rather than a panacea for American warriors. None of these much-advertised wonder technologies ever turn out to perform as promised, but that fact never stops them, as with drones today, from embedding themselves into our world. From the atomic bomb came a whole nuclear landscape that included the Strategic Air Command, weapons lab, production plants, missile silos, corporate interests, and an enormous world-destroying arsenal, as well as proliferating versions of the same large and small across the planet. Nor did the electronic battlefield go away. Quite the opposite. It came home and entered our everyday world in the form of sensors, cameras, surveillance equipment, and the like, now implanted from our borders to our cities. Rarely do wonder weapons or wonder technologies disappoint enough to disappear. And those latest wonders, missile and bomb-armed drones, are now multiplying like so many electronic rabbits. And, I'm not going to read all this. It goes on forever, but... very interesting article there. And that's absolutely true. I mean, we are entering that time where everything's going to be automated, including the labor that people now do. And as I talked about last night, that's why these guys are starting to poison everything. They've got to start eliminating a bunch of us. They allowed the population on Earth to rise to a certain level. And, you know, I told you this a couple of years ago, back when I was on Oracle, and I didn't like saying it. I don't like saying it now as much as I didn't like saying it then, but, you know, I just can't, you know, what I believe and what I look at constantly changes, but this is one thing hasn't changed. And that's that I believe that that's why they allowed this large population surge to happen so it could later do a large, massive depopulation of the Earth in a gigantic worldwide blood sacrificial ritual to offer up that blood as a sacrifice to, you know, the macrobes, the oversouls, whatever they are. It sure does look like we're heading that way. This is great. I mean, if you think that they're not doing this now, they'll do this to catch Osama bin Laden, allegedly. If you think they're not doing this right now, you're out of your mind. This is from the London Guardian. CIA organized fake vaccination drive to get Osama bin Laden's family's DNA. That's what I was mentioning. Why do they want everybody's DNA? Why are they so interested in having every person on the planet's DNA catalog? Because certain people of certain birth and certain areas and bloodlines, for whatever reason, are of interest to the elite, possibly because they consider them to be a threat to their power structure. The CIA organized a fake vaccination program in the town where it believed Osama bin Laden was hiding in an elaborate attempt to obtain DNA from the fugitive al-Qaeda leader's family. A Guardian investigation is found as part of an extensive preparation for the raid that killed bin Laden in May. CIA agents recruited a senior Pakistani doctor to organize the vaccine drive in Abbottabad, even starting the project in a poorer part of town to make it look more authentic, according to Pakistani and U.S. officials and local residents. The doctor, Shaquille Afridi, has been arrested by the Inter Services Intelligence Agency, the ISI, for cooperating with American intelligence agents. Well, you should arrest the ISI and the American intelligence agents for fucking cooperating with each other. I mean, your vice president, Joe Biden, was the go-between between the Pakistani ISI prior to 9/11. He was the bag man. He was fucking Jack Ruby, man. He was the guy that was putting all the money from our CIA to the Pakistani ISI to set up the smoke screen for what would become the operation of 9/11. I mean, it's just a complete fraud. So we're going to put this guy in prison. Relations between Washington and Islamabad, already severely strained by the bin Laden operation, have deteriorated considerably since then. The doctor's arrest has exacerbated these tensions. The U.S. is understood to be concerned for the doctor's safety and is thought to have intervened on his behalf. The vaccination plan was conceived after American intelligence officers tracked an al-Qaeda courier known as Abu Ahmad al-Kawadi to what turned out to be bin Laden's Abbottabad compound last summer, Durkistan. The agency monitored the compound by satellite surveillance from a local CIA safe house in Abbottabad, but wanted confirmation that bin Laden was there before mounting a risky inside in another country. Well, setting up fake phony drives, blood drives, to take people's DNA. I mean, my God, the Masons up in Massachusetts had several programs, you know, come down here and let us chip your child for safety. I about shit myself when I saw that a couple of years ago. Now bring your child down to the local Mason Lodge. Let me put a fucking low jack on them. I mean, you really want the Masons putting a microchip in your kid? I mean, I don't know about you, but that to me just doesn't sound like it's very safe. Unbelievable the gall these guys. But, you know, never go to any blood drives. Never go give blood to the blood drives. Never go fucking do any of that stuff, man. It's just, it's all going somewhere. Authorities at Nashville International Airport say a 41-year-old Clarksville woman was arrested after becoming belligerent and refusing to allow Transportation Security Administration agents to search her daughter. A police report obtained by the Tennessean states that Andrea Fornella Abbott did not want to have her daughter, quote, touched inappropriately or have her crotch grabbed. Police claim that Abbott was taken to jail because she refused to calm down, yelling at and swearing at officials. She told me in a very stern voice with quite a bit of attitude that they were not going to go through that x-ray. No, it's not an x-ray, Burge reportedly explained to them. It's 10,000 times safer than your cell phone, and it uses the same type of radio waves as a sonogram. Yeah, right.
Suck Satan's cock.
I still don't want someone to see our bodies naked, Abbott insisted. The report also said that the woman was prevented from taking video of the confrontation with her cell phone, of course. No, you go through our scanners, you're going to be videotaped from the time you get out of your car at the airport to the time you go through, all the way through. But no, you can't video anything of us doing what we want to do to you. That would be illegal. Earlier this week, a family in Seattle filed a complaint with the TSA after their son was patted down twice. The TSA announced last month they would try to avoid invasive searches. Yeah, they try my ass. There is no try, only do or do not. Here's another one that'll make you feel warm and cozy. Tell me these fucking crusader motherfuckers ain't trying to go over there to the Middle East and convert people and basically do what they did in South America already. From a great, wonderful website, I'm sure, called CatholicCulture.org. Well, that's just a great winning name for a website, if you ask me. Jesuits teach nearly 4,000 Afghan youth. The vast majority of Afghans want peace, according to Father Stan Fernandez, an Indian Jesuit who directs the Jesuit Refugee Service in the strife-torn nation. The rebels are about 10,000, but attract the attention of the international community, he told Fides News Agency. Our mission is to give voice and hope to 99.9% of the Afghan population who struggle every day with all their heart to go forward and to build a better tomorrow. Oh, they make it sound so uplifting and beautiful, don't they?
Suck that shit, Jesuits. Oh, yeah.
Children and young people are tired of war, and very few of them have the opportunity to go to school. So the Jesuits are now teaching 600 students at Technical High School and 3,000 university students in Herat, Bayamon, and Kabul, and 200 elementary students who are refugees in Sohadat. Now, so the Jesuits are going and training all the young Afghans. Great. Ah, get them in there and brainwash them, boys. Strip away their culture. That's just good stuff. Let's see what else we have. A horn from one of the last surviving dinosaurs could finally prove that a massive meteor shrank into the reptile's reign on Earth. Now, I talked about this a bit recently. I think since we've been reading Lost Book of Enki, I may have mentioned it. We were reading William Bramley's Gods of Eden as well. But I've come across this several times, and I'm of the opinion that why they're trying so steadfastly, especially now, and I knew this was coming. I knew they were going to start doing this more and more. I knew this was going to be back in the media, and it is. But it's always been there. You guys ever notice why everybody knows, or everybody seems to know, or you know, have a differing opinion on what killed the dinosaurs? Why is it that we seem to be so obsessed with that? You guys ever wonder? It just seems like that's something that's constantly reinforced. You know, this was it a meteor? Was it, you know, an asteroid? Was it the climate? You know, what happened? And they seem to be very dogmatic in their approach to try and convince us what happened. My opinion of it is that it was from what I've read from the Sumerian texts, it was a terraforming event. Somebody, the Anunnaki, somebody basically saw what was down here, and re-terraformed the Earth. You ever see Star Trek? Was it Star Trek II: The Wrath of Khan? The Genesis Project, the Gene of Isis Project, where they, you know, shoot it down into a planet, and they can actually cause a planet to be terraformed, or it could be used as a weapon of terror to be launched on an already existing planet, and basically just be a reset button, just start everything over again. That's what I believe it is, and I think that's why they're going to such extents now to try and convince us of this. So they're saying that this fossil from the last dinosaur proves the species was wiped out by a killer asteroid once and for all. The 45-centimeter-long fossilized brow horn belonging to the family of plant-eating dinosaurs that included the famous three-horned triceratops. It was found at a geological site known as the Hell Creek Formation in the bleak Badlands of southeast Montana, U.S., where many other dinosaur fossils have been unearthed. What made this find so remarkable was its location, just 13 centimeters below the rock layer that marks the Cretaceous territory, or the KT boundary, the point to where the fossil record where the dinosaurs died. This suggests that the dinosaurs were around right up to the time that all traces of their existence vanished. Scientists believe that they then disappeared suddenly after an abrupt global disaster rather than a slow extinction. But, maybe they directed it at the Earth. Who knows? But definitely it was a re-terraforming event. So interesting article there. Here's another one from the Daily Mail. I haven't read this yet, but it seems to me that this may be, well, we've heard Jonesy recently saying that, oh, yeah, folks, they only want you to do DMT, folks. Folks, they're jacking DMT into their veins at Bilderberg Group meetings, folks. I've seen it. I was there. I saw his hernia, folks. I had my hand all up in it. I saw it. They're jacking DMT at Bilderberg Group meetings, folks. It's true. But it seems that there's this sort of, smear campaign going on against, you know, spiritual experiences. I wonder why, you know, now that we're entering the point where pretty much everybody is going to be having one of those type of experiences. Many people are right now, and there's a reason for that. We're in the Great Divide. We're moving into closer and closer to the alignment. Those who talk of having an out-of-body experience often find their claims of a spiritual experience are much mocked. And now scientists have joined the skeptics, saying such events are nothing more than vivid hallucinations, and some of us are predisposed to them. Well, no, we know scientifically it's an out-of-body experience has everything to do with the secreting of DMT from your pineal gland through your body during sleep and times of high stress and point of orgasm and when you're giving birth and point of death and you know, again, high stress situations. But you know, they're researchers at the University of Birmingham claim that they occur when instabilities in the brain cause people to become disoriented and lose all sense of where their body is. No mention in this article anywhere about DMT or anything else, but just a complete attempt to try and discredit spiritual experiences. And I think there's a systematic campaign going on right now to do that, because we're in that time now where people are having these type of experiences, really whether they want to or not. The social X-ray glasses that let you know exactly what another person is thinking. Going on a date can be a nightmare for the best of us, and now a pair of social X-ray glasses promises to tell you exactly what the other person is thinking and when you should stop talking. I'm not making this up. This is real. The glasses have a built-in camera which monitors the other person's facial expressions and catches them with up to 24 known features which convey emotions. It will then tell the individual via an earpiece and lights on the glasses what their date is thinking. In a traffic light style system, a red light means negative, amber means they are moderately interested, and green means your date is happy. The glasses are currently under development by researchers at the Massachusetts Institute of Technology's Media Lab. They say that wearing them during a conversation with another person is like having an extra sense that they are bored or losing interest. Yeah, because, I mean, why would you want to use your brain or your mind or your natural instincts to determine that? No, we could just have technology. We can upgrade you with that for only $19.95. We can jack it right into your cerebral cortex and right add it right into your visage. Here you go. I mean, that's what it'll be. That's what they're going to do once they, you know, get us all on the transhumanist grid. They're going to sell us plugins and upgrade packages, you know, for the rest of our lives. Oh man, you don't have the X-ray plugin, dude? Oh fuck, man. That must suck to be the poor kid, dude. Live on the poor side of town. Yeah, only the cool kids got the X-ray plugin. Oh, dude, you're still using that fucking, that see in the dark plugin, dude. That's so 2 years ago. Stuff just gets sicker as the days go by, doesn't it? All right, well, we're going to take a break, come back, and we'll get into Lost Book of Inky tonight, unless anybody out there has any emails. You want to get any more in tonight, globalrealityshow@gmail.com. This broadcast originates from my website, www.theglobalreality.com. Stay with us, folks. We'll be back here in just a few minutes. We'll be right back. All right, back here with you on the Global Reality, right here on the Global Reality Radio Network. I'm your host, Josh Reeves. Thanks for being with us here tonight. And getting Moon Batty here on the broadcast. Thanks so much for being with us. Had a lot of hits on our Secret Right video on YouTube after Red Eyes posted that. They did a really good job. I mentioned that last night. A really good job on the presentation of the archive of the show. Really, they did a good job. I like how that little they put that little graphic in the background of the picture of Alex Jones where he looks like he's about to try to mesmerize you. Look slowly. Look into my eyes. Give me your enchiladas right now. And nobody's going to get hurt. Look into my eyes. Now at Infowars.com. I will mesmerize you for $19.95 to give me all of your enchiladas.
That's what it looks like. That's too funny. But yeah, they did a good job on that. But no more emails here tonight. So thanks to everybody who did send in emails. Again, please support our work right now at the website, legalreality.com. Chip and banner and donate button is there. And we do need your support right now to keep it commercial-free, uncensored, and pushing forward. And it's getting exciting. Doing the Red Ice interview, and now this thing, possible thing with this TV show. Who knows? Coast to Coast is next. I need to go on there, and that's where I need to go. I need to go on there and blow the minds of the Chupacabra fans on the Snorri show. I definitely won't get on there now. I just called him George Snorri. Oh, well. Fuck it. Dude, we'll fucking put you to sleep in 2.5 seconds. I mean, it's just, I can't, you know, I just got to be straight up about that one. All right, let's see here. Now, this is the account of the Adamu and the Tiamat in the Eden. So I guess I don't have to tell you, where this is going. The Adamu and the Tiamat in Eden. Which is Adam and Eve in Eden, but here it's Adamu and Tiamat in the Eden, E-D-I-N, see? But it just smashes the whole idea of, you know, oh, all that's original stuff. That came from the Bible, yeah. Yeah, right. Long before that, Bubba, here we go. So this is basically the original story of Adam and Eve, I suppose. Here we go. And how they, knowing of procreation, were given and to the Abzu expelled. To the Abzu, I guess, is earth or the land. After Tiamat, in the womb of Ninki, she was fashioned. And seven vessels of the clay of the Abzu made Ninma ovals of the two-legged females. She extracted the life essence of Tiamat, bit by bit, in the vessel she inserted. And the vessels of the clay of the Abzu she made and formed the admixture, incantations as the procedure befits she was uttering. I think I read this last night. Didn't I read this last night? Or something similar to it. Some of this stuff repeats itself, so sometimes I can't remember whether I read it already or not, but we'll just read it again for the heck of it. Their features were proper. They were uttering good sounds. Thus, there were seven female counterparts for the primitive workers created. Seven male and seven female did the four leaders create for them. After the earthlings were thus created, let the males inseminate the females. Let the primitive workers themselves beget offspring. So was Enki saying to the others, after the allotted time, offspring's other offspring will beget. Plentiful will be the primitive workers' numbers. The toil of the Anunnaki they shall bear. Enki and Ninki, Ninma and Ningishida were joyful, the fruits, elixirs they were drinking. For the semen and the seven cages they made, among the trees they placed them. Let them grow up, malehoods and femalehoods attain. Let the males inseminate the females. Let them by themselves beget offspring. So they were saying to each other, as for Adamu and Tiamat, from the toil of the excavations, they shall be protected. Let us to them the Eden bring over to the Anunnaki therein our handiwork we will display. They want to take, you know, basically they're saying they want to take Adam and Eve and show them to the Anunnaki and say, hey, look what we did. This is our hand. Look, you know, we've got ourselves a slave race here. Aren't you proud of us? To Eridu and the Eden in the city of Enki, Adamu and Tiamat were taken. An abode in an enclosure for them was built for them to roam where they could. So they built them like a, basically like a little dome. It was like, that's what Eden was, is what essentially what they're saying here. It's like, was like a, you know, a nature preserve, like a habitat, like their little, you know, area they let them frolic in, much like we've always kind of thought it was. The Anunnaki came to the Eden to see them from the landing place they came. And what they refer to as the landing place is described previously here in the Lost Book of Enki identically to the area in Peru where the Nazca lines are located, where we see evidence that it was a landing strip. They even describe here in the Lost Book of Enki the shearing off of the mountaintops, which are indeed there in Peru where the Nazca lines are. So apparently they come down to the landing place, essentially Peru, Nazca lines, and then they travel in their ships from there over to, you know, Cydonia, the 33rd degree parallel. What later became Sumeria, Iraq. Enlil came to see them, and his displeasure was diminished once he saw them. Ninurta came to see them. Ninlil did as well. From the way station on Lamu, which is Mars, Marduk, the son of Enki, also came down to see. It was a sight most astounding. A wonder of wonders it was to behold. Your hands have made it. The Anunnaki were the fashioners. The Agigi, who were between Earth and Lamu, shuttled and were also agog. Primitive workers have been fashioned. Our days of toil now can end, they were all saying. In the Abzu, the newborns were growing. For their maturing, the Anunnaki were anticipating. Enki was the supervisor. Ninma and Ningishida also came. In the excavations, the Anunnaki were grumbling. Patience to impatience gave way. Enugi, their overseer of Enki, was often inquiring. For primitive workers, the outcry he conveyed. The circuits of Earth, the orbits of Earth, rather, grew in number. Maturity of the Earthlings was overdue. No conceiving among the females was observed. There was no birth giving. By the cages among the trees, Ningishida a couch of grass made for himself. Day and night, he watched the Earthlings to ascertain their doings. Indeed, he saw them mating. The males were inseminating the females. Conceiving there was not. Birth giving there was not. Enki pondered the matter deeply. The creatures once combined, he contemplated, none of them had offspring, had begotten any offspring. By combining the two kinds, by combining the Anunnaki and the humans, a curse had been created, Enki said to the others. Let us afresh examine the essences of the Adamu and the Tiamat, Ningishida was saying. Their MEs, which we're assuming is their DNA, will be studied bit by bit to ascertain what is wrong. In Shurabak, in the House of Healing, the essences of Adamu and Tiamat were contemplated. With the life essence of the Anunnaki males and the females, they were compared. Listen to this. Like two entwined serpents, Ningishida separated the essences. Arranged like 22 branches on a tree of life were the essences. So, wow, 22 branches of the DNA corresponded to the, you know, 22 branches on the tree of life. No coincidence there. Their bits were comparable. The images and likeness they properly determined. 22 they were in number. The ability to procreate they did not include. Another two bits of the essence of the Anunnaki present Ningishida to the other showed. one male, one female. Without them, there was no procreating. So they had to add extra, you know, extra little bits of their DNA to that. In the molds of Adamu and Tiamat, they were not included in the combining. Ninma heard this and was distraught, and with frustration, she seized Enki. The clamor in the Abzu is great. Mutiny is again in the making, Enki said. Primitive workers must be procured, lest the gold extraction shall be ceasing. Ninkazita, in these matters, learned a solution was proposed. To his elders, Enki and Ninma, in the House of Healing, he whispered, let all the heroines who Ninma were assisting sin away. They locked the door behind them, the three with the two earthlings alone remaining. Upon the four others, Ninkazita, a deep sleep, descended into a deep sleep. The four he made unfeeling. From the rib of Enki, he extracted the life essence. There's the part with the rib. Whose rib? The rib of Enki. Into the rib of Adamu, the life essence of Enki, he inserted. From the rib of Ninma, a.k.a. Isis, the gene of Isis, here we go, the life essence he extracted. Into the rib of Tiamat, the life essence he inserted. Where the incisions were made, the flesh thereon closed up. Then the four of them by Ninkazita were awakened. It is done, he proudly declared. To their tree of life, two branches have been added. With procreating power, their life essences are now intertwined. Let them freely roam as one flesh, let thorn knots each other, Ninma was saying. In the Eden's orchards to freely roam, Adamu and Tiamat were placed. Of their nakedness, they became aware. Of malehood and femalehood, they were knowing. Tiamat made aprons of leaves, so they would be distinguished from the wild beasts. In the heat of the day, Enlil was strolling in the orchard. He was enjoying the shade there. Without expectation, Adamu and Tiamat he encountered. He noticed the aprons on their loins. What is the meaning of this? Enlil wondered. He summoned Enki to explain it to him. The matter of procreation, Enki explained to Enlil. The seven and seven had failed to Enlil, he admitted. Ninkazita examined the life essence and noticed that an additional combining was needed. Great was Enlil's anger. Furious his words were. The whole thing was not to my liking. For acting as creators, gods, I had opposed. The being that we need, it already exists. Even you said this, Enki. All we needed to do was put our mark on it. Thereby, we would fashion primitive workers. Healing heroines put them at risk. Ninma and Ninki were in danger. To no avail, it was all. Your handiwork was a failure. Now the last bits of our essence to these creatures you have given. To be like us in procreation knowing, perchance our life cycles on them you will bestow. He's saying, yeah, this is where you get into the moral conflict between the brothers Enlil and Enki. Because on the one hand, they both were in agreement that, you know, they needed to fashion a primitive worker race. But Enlil's idea was to basically make, you know, a non-conscious, you know, animal, essentially, that would do the work. And when they couldn't get that to happen, that was when, you know, Enki and the whole clan decided that, hey, you know, we've got to put some of our DNA inside of them to make them be able to make what we need. But Enlil here is saying that perchance our life cycles will be, he's having a problem because they're saying, you know, you're going to bestow our life cycles onto them. And that right there explains why humans have we should live for a lot longer than we do. You know, the Anunnaki have they orbit around the sun once every 3,600 years. So 1 year, which is a shar on Nibiru, is 1 year for them. But they started noticing when they came to Earth, that's why they had to build the slavers, that they were growing old and aging and dying rapidly here on Earth. And so in Lil's problem with this was that, you know, you're going to create, by using their DNA, a species that would have a relatively short life because of the rapid orbit of the Earth around the sun. So he was, you know, was concerned with that. And we'll find out later. This is why, of course, Enlil ordered the Great Flood and ordered mankind to be wiped out. But because Enki had love and compassion and saw the primitive workers as, you know, his creations, this is where he allegedly created the Ark, the spaceship, and, you know, kept the DNA essences inside of them so that they could, you know, continue to thrive. And then, and that's what this whole book of Enki is supposedly about. Is this is his account, the account that he attempted to use to set up the Brotherhood of the Serpent in order to teach mankind in secret the history of the Anunnaki so that we would not repeat those same mistakes ourselves. And of course, they just relegate this stuff to the fringe and act like it has no historical context when it in fact very much does. So, thus Enlil did speak angry words to Enki. Enki, Ninmah, and Nigazita were summoned to pacify Enlil with words. "My lord Enlil," Nigazita was saying, "knowing for procreation they were given. The branch of long living to their essence tree was not." Ninmah then spoke up to her brother. So they're again, you know, admitting right there that they could add, you know, more essence to the DNA, which would make them live longer, but they didn't do that. So maybe that's what we should be looking for. How can we add stuff to our DNA to make us live longer? Obviously, it can be done. There's proof right there. Why isn't science on that? You know, they know. They're full of well aware of that. I think Kissinger and Rockefeller are in their fucking 90s, and they're in better shape than some of us are. Ninmah then spoke up to her brother Enlil. She said, "What choice, my brother, did we have? Just to let it all end in failure and let Nibiru face its doom? Or try by procreation to let these earthlings undertake the toil? Then let them be where they are needed," Enlil said with anger. "To the Abzu, away from the Eden, let them be expelled." There you go. There's the explanation of Adam and Eve from Eden, the throwing them out there. You know, get them out of paradise, throw them out there into the fucking gold mines where we need them, and get their asses out there mining this fucking gold for us if that's what you want them to do. Don't put them here in a paradise and make them think they're free. Get them out there and make sure they know they're fucking enslaved. Sound familiar? Yeah, that's what you're all your, it's just great, great stuff right there, isn't it? That's what all your religions are based on right there. Okay, so we're moving into the seventh tablet now. We're moving right on through this book. The seventh tablet. "To the Abzu, away from the Eden, let them be expelled." So did Enlil command the decree from the Eden to the Abzu, and the Adamu and Tiamat were expelled. In an enclosure among the trees, Enki placed them. He left them to get to know each other. With joy, Enki did see what Nigazita had come to be. Tiamat was now with child and frolicking. Ninmah came to the birth-giving to watch. A son and a daughter, twins, to the earth beings were born. With wonderment, Enki and Ninmah watched the newborns. They watched how they grew and developed, and it was a marvel to them. Days were as months, months to earth years accumulated. By the time Adamu and Tiamat had other sons and daughters, the first ones were by themselves procreating. Before one shar of Nibiru had passed, the earthlings were proliferating. With understanding were the primitive workers endowed, of commandments they were comprehending. To be with the Anunnaki, they were eager. For food rations, they toiled well. Of heat and dust, they did not complain. Of backbreaking, they did not grumble. Of the hardships of the work of the Anunnaki and the Abzu were relieved. The vital gold was now coming to Nibiru, and Nibiru's atmosphere was slowly healing. The Earth mission was proceeding with satisfaction to all. Among the Anunnaki, those who from heaven to earth came, there was also espousing and procreation. The sons of Enlil and Enki, from sisters and half-sisters, from healing heroines, took spouses. To them on earth, sons and daughters were born. Here we go. The watchers, you know, they were watching Adam and Eve grow, watching their progression. And now what are these watchers doing? They're procreating with these earth beings that have now been born and having children by them. Uh-oh, this is going to be problems. This is going to be trouble. Though by the life cycles of Nibiru, they were endowed. By earth cycles, they were quickened. When on Nibiru, they would still be in diapers. On earth, they became a child. When Hu on Nibiru began to crawl, they on earth were running around. Special joy there was when to Nannar and Ningal, twins were born. A daughter and a son they were, Iana and Utu, by Ningal they were named. With them, a third generation of Anunnaki on earth were present. For the offspring of the leaders, tasks were allocated. Some olden chores were divided easier among the offspring. They were made to the olden chores. New tasks were added. Upon the earth, the warmth was rising. Vegetation flourished. Wild creatures overran the land. The rains were heavier. Rivers were gushing. Abodes, houses were in need of repair. Upon the earth, the heat was increasing. The snow-white parts with water were melting. I see, global warming. Weren't any cars running around back then, but the earth started getting hotter, right? And the earth started to rise. No SUVs running around doing that back then, right, guys? The bars of the seas of the oceans were not containing. From the depths of the earth, volcanoes and fire and brimstone were belching. The grounds were trembling each time the earth was shaking. In the lower world, the snow-white-hued place, the earth was grumbling. At the tip of the Abzu, Enki made him a place for observing. So the earth's undergoing catastrophic changes. The watchers have now mated with their creations. In other words, they've created these, you know, this slave race and then and themselves, you know, had children with them. And this is where you start to see the beginning of the separation of the bloodlines. And we're going to start moving into more and more of this, you know, these cataclysmic changes happening on Earth, the judging of the creatures, the rest of that, you know, the finding between Enlil and Enki. It's getting interesting. So page 152, remember that, page 152, that's what we'll pick up next time. And boy, good stuff there tonight. Out of the Lost Book of Enki. Glad you all could join us here tonight. Again, please support our work at theglobalreality.com. The Chipping Band, the Dunny Buttons there. We haven't had any support in about a week, so we're kind of in need of that right now. So please donate if you can. My name is Josh Reeves. I love each and every one of you, and we'll see you next time for the broadcast. You guys have a great night. Take care.